Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. Which branch of the military has the toughest training course for its officers and special operators is a matter of animated debate. There's no question, the Army's Ranger School is a viable candidate for carrying that designation. Over 9 weeks and three grueling phases, soldiers undergo physical, mental, and emotional challenges that test their endurance, resilience, and leadership. My guest today went through Ranger School twice, first as an infantry officer in 2004, and then just last year as the first journalist to embed with the class all the way through the course. His name is Will Bardenwerper, and he wrote an article about his experience for Outside Magazine called Army Ranger School is a Laboratory of Human Endurance. Will and I begin our conversation with why he wanted to observe Ranger School from a third-party perspective after participating in it firsthand as a soldier. Will then explains the difference between earning your TAB by graduating from Ranger School and being an official Army Ranger who belongs to the Ranger Regiment Special Operations Force. Will then gives us a big-picture overview of the three phases of Ranger School: bedding phase, mountain phase, and swamp phase. We then dive into what happens at each phase, taking side trips along the way, into the controversy of allowing women into the course, whether or not it's gotten easier since Will went through, and the importance of doing well in the combat patrol exercises and peer reviews in which the students participate. We end our conversation discussing the lessons in endurance that civilians can take away from those who graduate Ranger School and earn the TAB. After the show's over, check out our show notes at aom.is/rangerschool. Will joins me now via clearcast.io. All right, Will Bardenwerper, welcome to the show.
Great, thank you for having me.
So you are a former U.S. Army infantry officer, also the author of a book, The Prisoner in His Palace. But back in 2019, you joined a class of soldiers and officers who were going through Ranger School. The thing is, though, you yourself, you graduated Ranger School back in 2004. Why do you think it was necessary to go back as a third-party observer to write about what it was like to go through Ranger School when you already did it yourself?
Well, I think that's a good question. And maybe the way I begin the article is the best way of answering it, which is that, you know, I'm lucky enough to have spent 14 or so months in Iraq during a pretty violent year there and in a pretty violent place. But luckily enough, I don't almost ever have a bad dream about that experience. However, not a month goes by when I don't wake up in the middle of the night from a nightmare imagining that I have to go back to Ranger School. And so I think for that reason, I decided to go back in an effort to kind of discover what it was about that experience that, you know, impacted me the way that it did.
Well, so let's talk about the Rangers for those who aren't familiar with them, because I think, I don't know, I say in the past 20 years, like out of all the special operations groups in the military, the Navy SEALs have probably gotten the lion's share of attention in the popular press and the media. So a lot of people aren't familiar with the Army Rangers. What sort of operations do the Rangers take part in? Like, what's their specialty?
I mean, that is, I think, a valid point. For whatever reason, the SEALs have garnered, you know, a lion's share of the publicity. But I mean, I think, you know, for most folks not too familiar with the military, but maybe they have seen a few of those SEAL movies, you know, they're not that dissimilar. Obviously, the Army doesn't, you know, engage in the underwater operations that SEALs are capable of. But as far as the kind of work that they've been doing in Iraq and Afghanistan, there are quite a few parallels. The Army Rangers are special operators. They're highly trained, very selective. And the kinds of missions that they would engage in would be, you know, along those same lines of attempting to locate, capture, potentially kill, you know, high value targets, you know, sometimes behind enemy lines, so to speak, in dangerous places. So you think about your traditional raid where you're trying to find an enemy target. That would be the kind of mission that they would engage in. They're also very skilled at reconnaissance operations. I mean, if you think back, I think a lot of people are probably still familiar with the movie Black Hawk Down. That was a group of Army Rangers and Delta Force operators who were assigned to capture a Somali warlord. The mission kind of went south and they had to fight their way out of a pretty tricky situation. But that's the sort of mission that they would often be assigned.
Well, another interesting thing about the Rangers, so you can earn your Ranger TAB, but then you can also be part of the 75th Ranger Regiment. So what's the difference between the two?
Yeah, it's a little tricky, I guess, you know, for those not in the Army and well-versed in the nuance of these things. So the 75th Ranger Regiment is that special operations component of the Army. And the way it typically works on the enlisted soldier side would be that you sign a contract to join that, or to have the opportunity essentially to join the Ranger Regiment, assuming you pass all the prerequisites. And so a young soldier that signed that sort of a contract would go to basic training. He'd go to his infantry training. He'd be assigned to one of the Ranger Regiment battalions. And then pretty quickly, you know, within the first year or so, he would go to Ranger school, and he would essentially have to pass Ranger school in order to return to the Ranger Regiment and be assigned there on a more permanent basis. So for them, it's almost like a, you know, an extended tryout in order to remain in the regiment. It gets a little more tricky on the officer side of the house, because officers are generally not allowed to go straight from like West Point, for example, or ROTC or officer candidate school, as I did, and become an officer in the Ranger Regiment. They would need to go to a conventional combat arms unit first. And then if they were a high performer there, they would then have a chance to apply to be selected to be an officer in the Ranger Regiment. And I guess just the final part to that answer would be, for someone like me, as a young infantry officer who was commissioned from officer candidate school, we are afforded the opportunity to go to Ranger school, receive that high quality training, and then the theory basically goes that we can return to whichever infantry unit that we are assigned and impart, you know, some of those skills and some of that knowledge to the young soldiers that we are responsible for leading. So that's kind of the reason why young officers would go to this school, even if they were not immediately destined to go to the Ranger Regiment.
So, I mean, why did you, was that the reason why you went to Ranger school and earned the tab so you could do that? Or was there something else going on there?
No, for an infantry officer, it's pretty much expected that you go and give it your best shot. Clearly not everyone completes the course, but you're at least given the opportunity to attend and to try. So yeah, I mean, it was an expectation, but I think for a lot of young officers, such as myself, it's also, you know, an opportunity to kind of prove ourselves. And I think that the, you know, one of the underlying principles is that if you can, you know, withstand the physical and the psychological stresses and challenges of Ranger school, you're going to be better equipped when you get to your first assignment, because you'll have at least a degree of confidence that comes with knowing that you've, you know, at a minimum, you can go an extended amount of time without a lot of food, without a lot of sleep, and be assigned to lead guys who are equally stressed and fatigued. And so I think, you know, in addition to the whatever tactical skills you are expected to learn, there's a degree of confidence that comes with that, that ideally you emerge from the course having gotten, and that will serve you well as you move forward in the Army.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't Ranger School also open to people in other branches of the military?
Yes, there are a handful. You'll see a few Marines, a few Air Force folks. Typically, they will draw from those organizations, you know, more specialized units as well. There's not a lot of them, but there will be some, and there actually are some foreign students as well on occasion.
So this article you wrote for Outside Magazine, you talked about how Ranger School is this sort of laboratory. And you were talking about that, this laboratory of human endurance. And I think one of the interesting things that I thought was useful were you going back and walking through the class with these guys you're going through, is that you're able to like talk to them and get their experience. Like, I mean, something that's different to hear, like write about your own experience, but then actually like hear from someone else and their perspective. So let's talk about Ranger School and this experience you had. Start off, big picture, how long is Ranger School and what are the phases, like a big overview, and then we'll dig into the details with each phase here in a bit.
Sure. So it's essentially 9 weeks, you know, 62 or 63 days, and it takes place in three-week phases, as you called it. It begins at Fort Benning, Georgia, at a place called Camp Darby. And as the battalion commander there explained to the students, and as it became, you know, clear to me, as I observed, really the only individual, you know, physical assessments that take place are on those first 3 or 4 days when they go through a sort of a battery of physical fitness tests that are basically designed to determine, you know, if you're, you know, in shape to complete the rest of the course. And so those are pass fail. If you pass, you move on. If you fail, you basically get sent home. And then, so that's the better part of the first week. And that's followed then by 2 weeks of simulated combat patrols. And those basically take the same general form throughout the rest of the course in the ensuing two phases as well. And I can, you know, maybe we can come back to what that's all about, because that's really at the heart of what the course is all about. But after that 3 weeks, you get, if you're, you know, successful, you move on to what they call mountain phase, which takes place in North Georgia, right along the Tennessee Valley Divide at the very southern tip of the Appalachian Trail. You have 3 weeks there. And if you're successful there, you move down to Florida for the final phase, which is called Florida phase or swamp phase. It takes place on the Florida Panhandle at a place called Eglin Air Force Base. The Ranger School has like a little outpost on this larger Air Force Base. And that's the final 3 weeks. And if you finish that successfully, then you go back to Fort Benning and you graduate. So that's basically how it's laid out. It's 9 weeks, three-week increments. And at no point will you basically expect to sleep more than about 4 hours. And more often than not, they're sleeping maybe 1 to 2 hours outside in the elements and eating, if they're lucky, you know, 2 prepackaged MREs, meals ready to eat a day. So that you have a pretty dramatic calorie deficit that's built up, because you're burning, you know, in the neighborhood of 6,000 plus calories, and you may only be consuming, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 calories. So that's why a lot of the students graduate and they've lost 15, 20 pounds over the course of that time period.
And that's all on purpose, because that's part of the training.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, lack of sleep and lack of food makes everything more difficult. And again, you know, I think the idea is you're preparing these soldiers for combat, and you want to kind of simulate some of the stresses that you may encounter overseas as best you can in a situation where they're not in any actual, you know, danger of someone trying to kill them. So you can try to identify other stressors that can make their leadership, you know, evaluations more challenging. So that's how the school generally works. And if you like, later on in the conversation, I can get into a little more about the patrols and what the students are kind of evaluated on.
Well, let's move that. So let's talk about that Benning phase. You're doing that physical fitness test, see if you're mm-hmm. in shape for that. Then you do the simulated patrols. Mm-hmm. What are they being evaluated, and what are those simulations like?
Sure. So the physical fitness tests, you know, on the surface are actually not, you know, I think most fit, you know, I go to a CrossFit gym, for example, and, you know, I think most of the folks that come to my gym, you know, on a good day would be able to do 49 push-ups, 59 sit-ups, run 2 miles and whatever it is, you know, under, I can't remember the exact amount of time. Actually, it's a 5 mile run in under 40 minutes. And then there's some other tests, a land navigation test and a combat water survival test. But, you know, on their own, you know, they're probably not, you know, very intimidating to a young, fit athlete. But what makes them more difficult is the fact that you're doing those, you know, essentially in the middle of the night. You're getting woken up at 3 a.m. It's pitch dark. It might be raining. It might be cold. It might be muddy. You haven't eaten. And you know that, you know, the future of your Army career to some extent is going to be impacted by your performance. So there's a lot of professional stress. So something, you know, it's a lot different to do 49 push-ups in the comfort of your gym on a good night's sleep after a nice meal than it is at 3 a.m. in a driving rainstorm, you know, having not eaten and not slept, and in conjunction with all these other tests that are being administered. So assuming you can get through that portion of the first week, then you transition into those patrols. And that's really at the heart of what Ranger School is all about. And how that works is each day you wake up, you know, let's say again, you know, 3 a.m. or so, and you're broken into let's say maybe a 30-man platoon, and then 4 squads within that. And the Ranger instructors will then identify a group of 3-4 leaders for that day's operation. That might be a raid, it might be an ambush, it might be a reconnaissance. And they then will be evaluated over the course of the next, you know, 20 or so hours on their ability to accomplish the mission. And as a student, you need to successfully accomplish one leadership role during each phase to move on to the next phase. And you might get 2 to 3 opportunities in the event that you fail in your first attempt. And so that's essentially at the heart of what Ranger School is. It's the Ranger instructors observing you as you spend a day leading your fellow Ranger students on that day's combat mission. And they're soldiers whose job it is to play the part of the enemy for all of those missions. So they try to make it as sort of lifelike and realistic as possible. So if it's an ambush, you know, you'll go to the location. It might be a pretty long overland movement through the woods. You have to navigate your way there successfully. You have to put your soldiers in place, and then other soldiers will play the part of the enemy, you know, coming down the road that you then engage in your ambush. And so that's how it works. And at the end of it, the ranger instructor will take the leaders aside and will explain to them what they did well and what they did not so well.
And that's the thing, the big takeaway I took from this, that you often think of these special operations schools as very about the individual, your ability to endure individually. And yeah, there is that, but like really, the essential part of those things is like, can you lead and work as a team? Like that seems like the thing that's the most important part of this, or what the instructors are trying to get through their heads.
Mm-hmm. No, that's absolutely right. And that is something that I think became more clear to me watching it than was maybe clear to me when I was a student going through it 15 years ago, when I think I kind of viewed it more as kind of like an individual tryout to evaluate, you know, just how tough you were as an individual and what you could endure. Clearly that's important, but what's more important is your ability to contribute to the group. And the students who I you know, kind of started to observe as being among the more successful ones were the ones who were always externally focused on picking up their teammates, you know, even when they were not in a leadership position. They did it all the time. And so, you know, what really contributed to their success was their ability to figure out, what am I good at? You know, maybe I'm just a real big, strong guy and I can carry more equipment than other people when we're, you know, on these endless, you know, marches up and down the mountains. Maybe as the case was with one or two of the younger female officers who weren't as physically imposing, but they were really good at delivering operations orders, which is something that's very important for young officers to be able to do. And so maybe there was a young soldier going to the Ranger Regiment who didn't have a lot of experience with that, and so they could help him out with that. So it was critical to kind of identify, what is it that I'm good at? How am I uniquely qualified to help this group? And then do it. And what I really found to be interesting was the fact that not only did that help the group, and not only did it help those soldiers when it came time for there to be these peer evaluations, which we can discuss later, but it helped the soldiers themselves because it took them out of their own minds. If you're actively engaged helping other people, you're less likely to just sort of recede into your own discomfort and misery and kind of the dark places that you can go if you allow your mind to go there.
We're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. Texas Pete is the sauce that allows you to sauce like you mean it. Each Texas Pete sauce is packed with a bold, balanced flavor. The signature tanginess is what makes it a legendary hot sauce that can be used on just about anything. You're definitely going to want to try every flavor. The original hot sauce has a famous secret blend of fermented peppers. Their hotter hot sauce is 3 times hotter than the original, and it's not for the faint of heart. They also got a flavor called Sabor by Texas Pete, adds authentic Mexican flavor. And they also have a dust dry seasoning that matches the flavor of the original hot sauce in a flavorful dry rub. But the flavor that I've been enjoying lately is the chopped sriracha sauce. It's got chili, garlic, and some tropical tangy notes. It's really good. I love putting on my eggs. Texas Pete, sauce like you mean it. Visit TexasPete.com and use the store locator to find Texas Pete products, as well as purchase sauces and get recipe inspiration. And you can use promo code PODCAST24 for 20% off at TexasPete.com. That's PODCAST24. For 20% off at TexasPete.com. Check out the Sriracha Cha Sauce. Do you know what moms love? Moms love pictures of their kids and of their grandkids. At least my mom does. She loves pictures of my kids. And if your mom is like my mom and loves pictures of her grandkids, I got the perfect gift for her for Mother's Day. It's called the Aura Frame. The Aura Frame is a beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frame that allows you to share and display unlimited photos with your mom or anybody who likes pictures. This is a really cool product. The frame itself looks fantastic. The display is amazing. It's easy to set up. You just connect it to the Aura app, and then you can start uploading photos to this frame from the comfort of your own home. So I'm here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I can upload a photo via the Aura app, and my mom in Oklahoma City will start seeing it displayed in her Aura frame. And besides photos, you can also upload videos as well. It's a really cool, cool product for Mother's Day, and Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com and use code MANLINESS to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. That's AURA, frames.com.
Use code MANLINESS at checkout to get $30 off plus free shipping for their best-selling frame. Terms and conditions apply. It's wedding season, and while weddings are all about the bride and groom, they're also a chance for you to look your best. With a fully custom suit from Indochino, you'll walk into wedding season looking like $1 million, even though suits start at just $499. It's easier than ever to be the best dressed with Indochino. Order your custom suits now and they'll be ready for wedding season. The process of customizing a suit on Indochino, very easy to do. It's also a lot of fun. I've talked about my navy blue suit I've gotten from Indochino. First off, you can decide how the jacket is, how you want the pockets on the jacket to be, how you want the lapels, the vent on the back, the lining. On the pants, you can decide you want pleats or no pleats. I went no pleats on my pants on this one. And then you do the measuring process. You'll need someone to help you, but they have this very easy to follow guide. Send that all in a few weeks, you have a custom made-to-measure suit sent directly to your door, and you're going to pay about the same price for a suit that you'd pay for an off-the-rack suit at a department store. Look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor when you wear Indochino. Go to Indochino.com today and use code MANLINESS to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com, promo code MANLINESS. Check it out today. If you're like me, you've probably signed up for subscription services, but then you forgot about them. I'm talking about newsletters, streaming services, things like that. Well, with the personal finance app Rocket Money, it can help you find and cancel your unwanted subscriptions. It can also monitor your spending and help you lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. I had a chance to use Rocket Money, connected it to my checking account, and it found a bunch of subscription services that I forgot about. I was able to cancel them, and I was able to save a lot of money because the stuff adds up. Besides canceling your unwanted subscriptions, Rocket Money will even try to negotiate lower bills for you, up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. They'll deal with customer service for you. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/manliness. That's rocketmoney.com/manliness, rocketmoney.com/manliness.
And now back to the show. Well, so you mentioned something. Women now can go to Ranger School. That always hasn't been the case. When were women allowed? And was there any controversy about that, allowing females to take part in Ranger School?
Yes. And I wish I could give you a good date, but I would say it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 20, maybe 16-ish. I might be off a year or two in either direction. But around that time period, I think to date, there have been somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 that have graduated. So, I mean, it's still a very small percentage. For example, in the platoon I was covering of 30 people, I think there were two, you know, so it's certainly a small number, but there are some now who are going through. And one of the ones who graduated with the course I covered was among the higher performers. She did exceptionally well. And yes, there was controversy, as there has been with the decision to kind of allow women to join combat arms units to begin with. And I think that was, you know, for a number of reasons, some valid, probably some less valid. But the fact is that from what I observed, you know, they were treated pretty much the same as everyone else by the instructors and by their peers. Now, it so happened that the women I was following were among the higher achievers. Had they been struggling, you know, I don't know if that would have changed sort of the chemistry among the platoon, but in the situation I found myself watching, it actually went, I think, surprisingly smoothly given just the realities of what life in the field is like and the complications that, you know, could have arose had things not been managed as well as they were.
You mentioned, you know, there was some of like the valid and invalid. What were some of the valid and invalid, you know, reasons do you think people, there was a controversy?
I mean, I think there's always the concern, you know, over standards and, you know, will standards, you know, especially some of the physical standards be reduced in order to, you know, make it more likely that women can pass. I think ultimately there were very few things that I noticed really that were any different from when I was there. There was one change, but I think this predated the admission of women, but it made the school maybe slightly less physically demanding cumulatively. And that was, we did a 16 or 17 mile road march carrying all our equipment, you know, so 80 plus pounds at the end of that first week, whereas now they do a 12 mile march with less weight. And so I and a lot of other students, you know, after just 1 week, already had feet that were completely torn to pieces. And so we were essentially limping around on those combat patrols, trying to do the best we could, but in a lot of physical pain, which of course makes everything else harder. I think these students, you know, got out of that first week maybe in slightly better physical condition just because of that march had changed. But aside from that, you know, I certainly, when I did the article, I didn't want to be one of these guys who said, you know, oh, you know, I went through it when it was hard and now it's gotten easier, because I think pretty much since the first class, every ensuing class has said that about the next class. And that's not really the case. I mean, you still don't eat, you still don't sleep. There's still a lot of stress. You're still out in the cold and the rain and the mud. You know, those things haven't changed, even if there's a few things here and there that have maybe made it, you know, ever so slightly more manageable.
All right. So you do binning phase, you start those combat patrols, there's battle patrols. After that, you go to mountain phase and you're still more patrols. But what's going on there? How do the instructors, you know, ramp up the stress to make it harder there?
Yeah, well, so to get to mountain phase, you need to have earned, you know, what they call a go. So you need to have successfully passed one of those patrols. Not everyone does. I think 50% of the incoming class doesn't even make it through that first, you know, 3 or 4 day test of physical fitness. And so there's a smaller group of people, you know, moving forward at that point. But yeah, assuming you pass your patrol, you get through the fitness prerequisites, you move on to the mountains. I mean, what really changes there isn't so much additional stresses the instructors give you, it's the mountains and the terrain. And you go from kind of walking across, you know, relatively flat Fort Benning, even though there's some, you know, kind of dense vegetation and swampy elements to it. For the most part, it's relatively flat. You get to mountains and all of a sudden, you know, a 5 kilometer patrol looks a lot different when 4 of those kilometers are straight uphill carrying 100 pounds on your back. And so that's one element that makes it tougher. I think most people agree that the mountains are in many ways the toughest phase, primarily for that reason, just because you're carrying so much weight over such long distances, over such challenging terrain. And then the weather, of course, you know, up in North Georgia can be rough. You know, the winter weather in particular, there can be snow and cold. I went through with this class, you know, it was already March, I believe, into April, but there were still nights where it was freezing at night. And, you know, they're just sleeping out there. You know, they're not in a tent or in any kind of shelter. I mean, they're just on the ground. And so that makes it, of course, pretty difficult as well. And they're not always walking on nice paths. You know, it's not like a nice trail. Sometimes they're just breaking brush, going downhill at night with no visibility over steep terrain, not on a trail. So people are falling down left and right. It can be a real mess.
Well, speaking of the weather, when you were the crew you're with, like two soldiers got hit by lightning up on the mountain.
Yeah. Yeah, it was more than two, actually. It was I think four or five, including an instructor, got hit. I actually wasn't on that particular patrol, but I spoke to the people who were. And yeah, I mean, they were very fortunate to escape serious injury. And that's not entirely uncommon. I had spoken to some other folks who had been through different classes that also had either had near misses or been hit by lightning. In this case, they were medically evacuated and they returned to duty the next day. But yeah, you're dealing with some pretty unforgiving weather in those mountains.
And when you were talking with these soldiers during the mountain phase, like what were the things that they were struggling with the most that they were willing to share with you?
Well, that was kind of one of the cool parts of the story was being able to sort of earn their trust and have them confide in me. I mean, that was what I spent the first 3 weeks doing, was trying to establish a rapport with a handful of soldiers so I could kind of tell this story through their eyes and through their experiences. And they maybe shared with me things that they wouldn't be too, you know, as enthused to tell their friends. And so, yeah, I think one element of it is just the uncertainty of, you know, what am I going to finish or not, or get recycled, which is kind of this other thing that can happen if you don't earn your go on a patrol. You don't necessarily get dropped from the course. You may be given the opportunity to pick back up with the next class, but that means you have to wait 4 more weeks until they come through. And so that's 4 more weeks away from your family and your loved ones and your friends and just, you know, the comforts of society. So it was just this uncertainty, you know, when am I going to see my girlfriend again or my wife or my buddies? You know, am I going to get graduate in time for the, you know, you name it, the Super Bowl or the World Series or whatever, you know, event is on the horizon that people are looking forward to. And just the sense of, you know, we're kind of occupying this weird limbo, and we're disconnected from everything that we enjoy in life. And, you know, when is it going to end? That was kind of the source of some of their anxiety.
So you mentioned earlier, after each phase, so like the bending phase, the mountain phase, after all these patrols, that the soldiers are getting evaluated by the instructors, but also by their peers. And that's kind of a weird situation, because a bad evaluation by one of your peers could like end your Ranger school experience. Like you could recycle, or maybe you're just done. So with that in mind, was like there any pressure like not to give bad reports? They didn't want to ruin some guy's chance at the tab?
Yeah. So that's a very unique and important part of the school is what they call these peer evaluations. And so after each phase, and I guess the short answer to the question is no, because you have to evaluate all of them. And so you're given essentially a scorecard, and you have to rate everyone in your squad from one highest to, you know, let's say 14 lowest. So you can't just say, no, you know, I don't want to vote. You have to. And someone has to be number one and someone has to be number 14. I don't know the exact formula, but if enough of your peers vote you, you know, in the bottom third, let's say, you can either get dropped or recycled. I think they basically, they'll take that in conjunction with how you did on your patrols, what the Ranger instructors had to say. And if the Ranger instructor said this guy was a disaster and all your peers say he was a disaster, you know, more than likely you're going to get dropped. If your peers may say, you know, hey, maybe not the best performer, but the instructors saw some good things or some potential, maybe they'll give you another chance with the next class. But yes, I think, you know, that can be certainly a rude awakening for some students. I mean, there was one student, I believe, who in the first phase was literally ranked dead last by all 14 of his peers. And so I would have to think that's kind of devastating to learn. But, you know, if there's anything good to come of it, it can help him to identify his weakness and try to improve, you know, before he potentially is in charge of, you know, real soldiers in a real more high stakes situation. But yeah, that's an interesting part of the class. And it leads to, I think, you know, a lot of stress among, you know, some of the weaker performers.
So after mountain phase, it's swamp phase. Mm-hmm. Where does this take place again? And then what goes on there? Same, yeah. Is it more of the same?
Yeah, so that takes place down in the Florida Panhandle. It's in the swamps, as the name suggests. And it's the same idea as far as you're doing these combat patrols and you're being evaluated on them. I guess one of the changes there is that, you know, some of them are waterborne on Zodiac boats. I should have said that during all these phases, you're doing some airborne operations. So you're actually jumping out of airplanes. And then there's some air assault movements. So they're doing operations on Black Hawk helicopters. And then in Florida, you would do, yeah, some airborne, some air assault, and some waterborne combined with just, you know, slogging through the swamps through, you know, up water that can be up to your neck, you know, obviously surrounded by snakes and whatever else are in the swamps. But yeah, you're being evaluated on your missions. I think that for a lot of the students, by that point though, they're so close to the finish line that it's perhaps not as challenging as the mountains were, simply because, you know, you can see the light at the end of the tunnel. And by that point, you've already successfully finished two phases. So there's a degree of confidence that comes with the fact that, you know, I earned my go in Benin, I earned a go in mountains. I've probably gotten some decent peer reports at this point to have made it this far. And, you know, I'm only 2 or 3 weeks away from graduation. So I noticed that there was actually a little bit of bounce in the step of the students I was following when they got to Florida for those reasons.
So some of the most poignant parts in your article were when you were talking to these guys after they failed, they got a no-go. Mm-hmm. And how, I mean, what was the typical response if you talked to a guy that they got the no-go after a mountain phase or bending phase or swamp phase?
Oh man, I mean it was tough. And I mean I had gotten to know some of them. I had grown to like them. I was kind of, you know, rooting for them, so to speak. And so to see them come up short, you know, it was, you know, I felt for them for sure. You know, not in all cases. I mean, in some cases they were just, you know, they just, you know, had just not done well at all, and you know, but for others, there were guys who were, you know, just right on the fence and were really trying hard and their heart was in the right place and they were giving it 110% and their performance, you know, wasn't necessarily terrible. It's just not a perfect science, and sometimes people don't pass. And so you know, their responses were usually, they weren't all uniform, but I would say there was kind of a weird mix of like short-term frustration and sadness, but coupled with a little bit of relief, you know, hey, this is over. And for better or worse, I'm going to be home, you know, eating a pizza with, you know, my loved ones in 24 hours, and you know, the misery is finished. But I think an awareness that, you know, despite that, it's something that they're going to regret, and that's going to stick with them for a long time. So yeah, there were some, definitely some, you know, kind of depressing scenes of guys, you know, giving their best and coming up short.
Did a lot of them decide they're going to recycle and try again?
If they're allowed to, most of them did, you know, attempt to do it again. In a few cases, there were guys who had already recycled once or twice, you know, so they've already been in this place for like over 100 days.
Oh, geez.
I think there was one guy that was pushing like 200 days, you know, so I mean, yeah,
that's like Groundhog Day, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like a horrible Groundhog Day. I mean, the quality of life is definitely far worse than at, you know, a minimum security prison. And so imagine like a 200 day, you know, sentence of jail, and it's pretty much worse because you're not, you know, sitting in a climate controlled room, you know, napping or watching TV. You're out in the mud and the rain. You're not eating. It's miserable. And so in a few cases, those guys did just say, you know what, I'm out of here. I can't be away any longer. In one case, there was a guy whose best friend was getting married. He was going to be the best man, and he just said, you know, this is an important relationship. I've been here for, you know, 100+ days. I'm not, you know, necessarily confident the outcome's going to change if I try yet again. You know, I'm done. I've given it my best, and I'm moving on.
And when you talk to the students that made it through Ranger School, what did they say that kept them going, even when they wanted to quit?
That there were all different kinds of motivations, and they would often write, you know, some kind of like an inspirational little slogan inside their patrol cap, and, you know, look at it when they needed to kind of dig deep and keep pushing. In one case, you know, a soldier was, and it's kind of a strange coincidence, but he actually knew the brother of one of my real good Army friends, and his brother perished on 9/11 in the World Trade Center. And so he wrote that guy's initials in his cap, you know, as kind of a motivational force, you know, hey, you know, this may be miserable for a short amount of time, but, you know, this is kind of why we're here, and drew strength from that. Other people would, you know, draw inspiration maybe from a parent or a grandparent who had served in the military and gone through, you know, equally or more challenging circumstances. Another guy wrote, "Remember the little things," you know, so an attempt that, you know, no matter how bad things are, I'll at least have a few minutes to maybe, you know, scarf down an MRE or get an hour of sleep, or maybe get on a, you know, an extra good day, get a letter from home and get a chance to look at it. But to try to just, you know, derive some form of pleasure from, you know, the most modest, you know, circumstances. So they all kind of had some kind of a trick, I think, for, the, you know, when moments got real dark, to kind of keep pushing forward.
Well, it seems like the common theme is that what you talked about earlier is they thought outside of themselves. They thought about someone else. Mm-hmm. That was the thing mm-hmm. that kept them going.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious. So I didn't ask this. Like, what do we know? Like, what the typical passage rate of Ranger School of a class is?
Yeah, I mean, they monitor that very carefully, and it generally hovers anywhere from 45% to 55% of the students who start will eventually graduate. But of that group, or of the starting group, only about 15% to 18% will go straight through, you know, 9 weeks without recycling at all. So yeah, that's kind of how it typically breaks down. Half of the people who start will eventually finish, but the majority of them will have to recycle one, if not more than one phase.
You know, after following this Ranger class as a reporter, journalist, did it change the way you viewed your own Ranger experience?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the reasons I went back again was because I mentioned this in the article, I was not the world's best Ranger student. And I was surprised by that to some extent, because I had always been pretty successful at what I had set my mind to. I was always a good student. I was always a good athlete. I was always a hard worker. And yet, you know, I struggled. And so part of the reason I went back was to kind of identify, you know, what was it about this place that, why did I have such a hard time? And so, yeah, watching these students, on the one hand, part of it was humbling, because I would see some of the high performers, you know, I don't want to say they made it look easy, but there were a few students who really did, you know, not appear to struggle very much. They were in the minority, but they were there. There was one young special forces soldier, for example, you know, who just really didn't look much different on graduation day than he did on day one, you know, and I was just like, how in the world is this guy capable of getting through this, you know, without, you know, really even breaking a sweat, you know? But at the same time, it was, you know, I saw plenty of other people who were probably more similar to myself, you know, who really did have to dig deep and who, you know, for whom it didn't come easy, but at the end of the day, they graduated and they could hold their heads high.
Did you think there are any lessons or insights about, I don't know, the human condition that Ranger School can give people, even those who've never gone through or probably never will?
Yeah. I mean, I think that lesson of remember the little things is an important one that can be applied, you know, to anyone's life. I find myself, certainly not every day, thinking about this, but I mean, there are times when things get tough and you can get stressed out. And then if you step back and you say, wait a second, you know, is it really that bad? You know, at the end of the day, I hopefully, you know, well, I have a roof over my head. You know, if it's raining out, I'm dry. If I want to take a hot shower, I can, you know, presumably I can find some food, you know, so, you know, as long as some of these sort of elemental needs are met, you know, as they are for, fortunately for most Americans, you know, other stuff can fall into place. But I think it's that idea of just not taking those little things for granted that can help, you know, power you through situations where, you know, other stuff may be, you know, more stressful in your life. So that was one enduring lesson. And the other one I think is just, you know, just very simple, but just don't quit. Usually things, if you set your mind to it and keep pressing ahead, things will get better. One of the chaplain in the mountains would tell the students, you know, because everyone I think wants to quit at one point or another. And he said, you know, the moment you quit and you go home and you get a good night's sleep and a good meal, you will regret having quit for the rest of your life, because you'll have kind of scratched that itch, you know, that desire to leave this place and to rest and to eat and to enjoy those things. But as soon as you enjoy them, even for a minute, you're going to realize that you can't undo that decision and that you wish you hadn't made it. So that was another, I think, lesson that you can apply to, you know, any number of elements of life today.
Well, Will, the article is Army Ranger School is a Laboratory of Human Endurance. It's on outsideonline.com. What are you working on now? Where can people learn more about the rest of your work?
Sure. Well, I would suggest anyone who's interested, take a look at my first book, which was The Prisoner in His Palace, Saddam Hussein, His American Guards, and What History Leaves Unsaid. That's an account of some young American soldiers who most improbably found themselves responsible for living alongside and guarding Saddam in the days before his execution, and then ultimately leading him to his execution. And in the process of doing that, they developed some really strange, I guess you could say, relationships with him, in that they knew, you know, intellectually that he was a very terrible person and he was guilty of some horrible crimes, but they also found themselves kind of growing to like him on a human level, to the point that when they had to deliver him to be executed, you know, some of them found themselves in tears because they had developed this strange bond with this person. So that book, hopefully people will enjoy. And then right now, I'm just beginning to write a book on what is expected to be the end of the minor league baseball's Appalachian League. Major League Baseball is in the process of getting rid of about 40 minor league teams. And in the case of the league I'm writing about, these teams have been a part of some of these small Appalachian working class towns and cities for over 100 years. And their loss is going to really leave a hole in the lives of these communities. But hopefully they will find a way to you know, restore baseball in some form and get back up on their feet. But I'm going to tell the story of kind of the forces that led to baseball's extinction. And then maybe if we're lucky, it's rebirth in at least some of these towns.
We'll have to check that. That sounds like a great one. Well, Will Barton-Werper, thanks so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure.
No, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
My guest today was Will Barton-Werper. He is a journalist and the author of the latest article in Outside Magazine, Army Ranger School is a Laboratory of Human Endurance. You can check that out on outsidemagazineonline.com. Also, check out his website, willbartonwerper.com, where you find more information about his work and his latest book, The Prisoner in His Palace. Also, check out our show notes at aom.is/rangerschool, where you find links to resources where you delve deeper into this topic. Well, that wraps up another edition of the AOM podcast. Check out our website at artofmanliness.com, where you can find our podcast archives, as well as thousands of articles we've written over the years about pretty much anything you can think of. And if you'd like to enjoy ad-free episodes of the AOM podcast, you can do so on Stitcher Premium. Head over to stitcherpremium.com, sign up, use code manliness at checkout for a free month trial. Once you're signed up, download the Stitcher app on Android or iOS, and you can start enjoying the AOM podcast ad-free. And if you haven't done so already, I'd appreciate if you take 1 minute to give us a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. Helps out a lot. And if you've done that already, thank you. Please consider sharing the show with a friend or family member who you think would get something out of it. As always, thank you for the continued support. Until next time, this is Brett McKay, reminding you not to listen to the AOM podcast, but put what you've heard into action.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.